Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in. I hope all of you are having a fantastic Friday. We are here in the Outkick studios. No limitations apply, however, to this program, and no limitations applied at all to Justin Rose's game on Thursday on the Masters golf course, which he was playing at a different level than everybody else. And Dub, we gave some gambling picks, but I wish we'd thought to give out Justin Rose at 100-1. He's been so unhealthy. I think the biggest story is he going to be able to maintain that health? His back, you can just see when guys have bad backs, especially golfers, the way they walk often looks uncomfortable, and it remains to be seen how well he is going to do as you know, you move through the tournament, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But he is a fairly substantial favorite at this point. 4-stroke lead over everybody else. Nobody played the course anywhere near as well as he did. He had a stretch, Dub, where he went 9-under through the final 11 holes, which was the best I think anybody had done in the final 11 holes at Augusta since 2004. And right now, he is the favorite, followed by Jordan Spieth, Hideki Matsuyama, John Rahm, Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, Webb Simpson, Dustin Johnson, and Brian Harman, all in order there. If you go to FanDuel.com/Clay, you can get bets in. That's effectively the top 10. You are a golf guru. You love it. You watch it all the time, every tournament, even the ones that aren't as big as the Masters. Couple of storylines I'm going to bring you in, Dub, to have you basically analyze it for us. Bryson DeChambeau doesn't take over Augusta. He didn't do it in November either. He was a big favorite. Rory McIlroy, it's so out of control. He hit his dad with a golf shot, which was a crazy coincidence. Jordan Spieth finishes strong. He's in the mix, as we just said. But the big story here, and I'll start with this one, is, in your mind, Justin Rose going to be able to keep this kind of consistency up at the top of the leaderboard, or do you think this is a phantom lead that is going to evaporate sooner rather than later?
Well, it's a great question, and what makes his round yesterday all the more impressive was the fact that he was playing in the afternoon slate. And in the afternoon, I'm not sure if you noticed, it was playing much more difficult than the morning was, because if you look at the leaderboard, a vast majority of the guys that are under par teed off in the morning. I guess it firmed up a little bit in the afternoon. You know, I'm not exactly sure why the case. It just got faster and firmer as the day went on. And Justin Rose, on the back nine, starting with his eagle at number 8, just lit it up. Now, will he be able to run the table and win this golf tournament from here on out? I'm not sure. I have my doubts just because of his health. And his recent form has really not been all that spectacular. But I think this is set up to be a fantastic week in a golf. I wouldn't imagine seeing the winning score being, you know, too far into the double digits under par like last year was when DJ took it home at 20 under.
So as you work through and break all of this down, Jordan Spieth seems like he has fought his way back into managing to be a top contender. But what is going on with Rory McIlroy? I mean, it seemed like he was kind of rounding into form, and maybe he'll bounce back after a really bad first day on Friday. But you watch golf all the time. What is the story here?
Yeah, well, I mean, Rory, I think one big thing that I've heard and a lot of people in the golf media world have been talking about is he's been trying to add more distance ever since Bryson DeChambeau's come onto the scene with his new added distance. And it kind of doesn't really make any sense why Rory would even worry about that, seeing as he was already one of the longest players in the entire world and one of the best players in the entire world. But this has been going on for a while now. He hasn't found the winner's circle since 2019, I believe, which is hard to imagine when you consider what this guy was doing 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, the guy is an absolute machine, but right now his form is so bad. But if you're a big Rory McIlroy fan, and there's a lot of people out there that are, the last 2 years at the Masters, he's shot over par in the first round, similar to what he did yesterday. But he's gone on to finish strong and shoot under par in the following three rounds. So I wouldn't necessarily count Rory out of this quite yet. Last year, he had a very similar first round and came back and battled and had a top 10 finish. So it's not totally panic mode yet if you're Rory McIlroy, just based off recent history at this tournament. But he does not look good. He does not have total control of this golf ball, which is what you definitely need at this course and at this tournament.
What about Bryson DeChambeau? There was all this talk that he was going to come in and revolutionize Augusta. That was happening back in November. It was happening again this year. In fact, he had moved himself all the way up to one of the favorites to be able to win this tournament. He goes out and he shoots a plus four. What did you see from him? Did he look like he was in control of his game in any way, or would you write him off at this point from contending at Augusta?
Well, he got in trouble early in his round. There was a couple of wayward shots off the tee. Specifically at the par 3-4th, his ball just got, he just lost it into the brush, lost ball, double bogey there. He's such an enigma to me at Augusta, because on paper, the way this course is laid out, which is why he was such a heavily favorite in November and why he was among the favorites this year, it just, you would think it suits his game absolutely perfectly, with the par 5s being able to, for him to take advantage of. And the thing that's really kind of killed him at Augusta, his best finish, by the way, was in 2016 when he played there as an amateur, which is hard to believe. He finished tied for 21st in that event. That's his best finish ever at Augusta. He wasn't even a professional golfer yet. I think his troubles on the greens, he's been missing a lot of makeable putts, and he hasn't quite figured out the green complexes yet. But like Rory McIlroy last year, he kind of had a bounce back. He made the cut on the number and had a decent tournament. But in terms of performance versus expectation, he is way off the board here.
DJ, Dustin Johnson, do you think he's still in the mix or not?
I absolutely do. DJ played really solid yesterday. He had a really bad three-putt on 18 yesterday to finish his round and make a double bogey to finish it two over. But anytime Dustin Johnson is within 10 shots of a lead after one round, especially at a course where he's shown the success that he has in the past, and considering Justin Rose has been in the form that he has been prior to yesterday and his health especially, I still think this tournament is wide open. I'll just put it this way. I would not bet on Justin Rose to win this event.
Yeah, it's intriguing to think about how exactly it might all shake down. Again, I'm looking right now at the tee times. I believe we've got some early tee times coming. Within the next hour, people are going to start teeing off, and we'll start to figure out who's going to be making a run up the leaderboard as we head into the weekend. We got a lot to get to, by the way. That is Dub breaking down everything in the world of the Masters, his favorite sporting event, I think you said, of the year. Anything else that stands out to you about the first day of the Masters?
The first day, no, but I'm looking forward to today because, as a lot of people know, the guys that went off in the morning yesterday will go off in the afternoon today and vice versa. So if Justin Rose, if the conditions are similar today as they were yesterday, I mean, he could have an opportunity to shoot another good score. But like I said, I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that this is Justin Rose's tournament to lose quite yet.
We'll know
a lot by the end of today, I think.
I mean, I think by noon, because Justin Rose tees off at 9:36 Eastern in the morning. So if he were going to have another round like he did on Thursday, we would know soon about what exactly is going to take place with him. We'll know what kind of number he's likely to post by 1 o'clock or so, because he'll be done and into the weekend, presumably. And it should be interesting to see how that shakes out for him, because he finished late and he'll start early. Other big news story that is out there, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, maybe at the top of the second hour of the program. The NFL draft, we are now, and I'm trying to do the math, I think 20 days away from the first round of the NFL draft, a little bit under 3 weeks. And there's starting to be some situations firming up a little bit. We know already Trevor Lawrence going to go number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We know in the second spot that Zach Wilson is going to go number two overall to the Jets. The question is, what's going to happen with the third pick? We know that the San Francisco 49ers traded up to get the Dolphins pick in order to be able to draft a quarterback. And yesterday, we started to see some big movement in the odds market suggesting that Mac Jones is going to be the 49ers pick. Now, there'll be some criticism about that. I'm going to talk about it at the top of the second hour. Some people out there are going to run around and they're going to say, hey, this is wild. You know, what in the world are the 49ers thinking with Mac Jones? That happens basically for any quarterback now, right? People think that they have figured out who's going to be a success, who's not going to be a success. And effectively, every year, you just flip a coin and some guys end up being good and the other guys end up being bad. And nowadays, nobody will actually stick to the guys that they draft. I mean, you got Sam Darnold gone after 3 years with the Jets. You've got Josh Rosen gone after 1 year. You got Dwayne Haskins gone after we can't even get to 2 years. Nobody is standing behind their quarterbacks for very long at this point. But I do think it's an intriguing question, as now Mac Jones appears to have emerged as the gambling market favorite for who is going to be the third overall pick. What does that mean for Atlanta, who is sitting there at four? If Justin Fields and Trey Lance are available, is some other team in love with one of these guys? Could they make an aggressive move to try to come up and get them? That is a story that may emerge as the biggest in the world of the NFL draft as we continue to count down the days.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor 94.5 Jocks down in Birmingham. LT, you're taking Friday off. You're getting up early with us, and you were at one of my favorite places in the world. You're down on the beaches in Rosemary for a long weekend. How's the weather looking down there?
A little shaky, a little dicey. You know, it's the forecast is rain all weekend long, but don't really care. I know you've got a place down here, and it's just awesome to get away. So I can battle the rain. I'll go to some dive bar and eat oysters and drink like stale draft beer, and I'll be totally fine watching the Masters.
It's cool to have the Masters back, isn't it? I mean, it is just a good feeling, I think, to be looking up, even though, you know, Thursday was kind of a massacre for a lot of the top golfers. It's just cool to be able to look up and see the tournament back after we missed it last April. And even though it was going on in November and I think it was cool, I think it's fair to say it doesn't have the same sort of connection or reaction that it ordinarily would have, if that makes sense.
No, 100%. You know, and even if you're not a golf fan, I think people are drawn in and attracted to the Masters. I mean, I'm kind of the casual guy that will always watch any and all majors, but I mean, the Masters is just that different feel. And I mean, it's just nice to have it back in the month of April and to have a little normalcy. I mean, this week has been great, you know, starting with Major League Baseball and what the Texas Rangers were able to do at full capacity. And you know this, you've been down where I am right now at least in the last couple of months, and it's felt normal down here.
Yeah, Florida for basically the entire year has looked basically the exact same, right? Like it hasn't been. I went down there last May, and we spent the whole part of May. And look, in Nashville where I live, things haven't been that crazy either. But Florida, I think, when you look back at the data, as we're starting to do now, I think you can argue very legitimately that Florida handled COVID better than certainly any big state did in the country. I mean, Texas also, I think, did a pretty good job. California has been a disaster. New York has been a disaster. I think when you break it down, Florida, when you look at the overall unemployment rate and the ability to keep things open, and frankly, a lot of other people who have fled states that are more significantly locked down. A lot of people have moved to Florida. A lot of people have moved to Texas. A lot of people have moved to Tennessee to try to get some form of normalcy back in their life.
Yeah, and the property down here, you know, that's one of the strange things that last year, you know, to get away last summer is we came down a lot. And, you know, I thought that the rates wouldn't be nearly what they were the year before because I assumed that there was a lot of people that had lost their jobs and furloughed and businesses were closing down. And the rates were actually going up because everybody was trying to escape their local government and their state guidelines and get down here. And as you said, now more and more people have moved down here and the property value is just completely insane now. But it's you know, I came down in February and, you know, we pulled up to a restaurant and I said, oh, man, I forgot my mask. And they said, you don't need a mask.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Florida. That's why a lot of people have been going.
Yeah.
We're talking to Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor 94.5 Jocks down in Birmingham. All right, big story a lot of discussion, and we've talked about it during the course of this show a little bit, and we will throughout the course of the show. We know who's going number one overall. Trevor Lawrence going to go to Clemson. We know who's going from Clemson to the Jags. We know who's going number two overall now, Zach Wilson from BYU to the Jets. And now there's a pretty good odds market. I love to follow it. You can gamble on where people are going to be drafted. Now it's starting to look like Mac Jones is going to go number three overall to the 49ers. What do you think about that as a guy who's covered Mac Jones in Alabama, watched a lot of his games? Would you have ever believed that he would be the number three overall pick in the NFL draft? In fact, if it ends up happening, would you have ever believed that he would be drafted higher than Tua? That would have been a hell of a parlay to be trying to lay.
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, just to put in perspective, you know, Joe Burrow going number one overall, if you would have told me that a couple of years ago, and I thought Joe Burrow was an average quarterback before that 2019 season, if you would have said one day Burrow goes number one or Mac Jones goes in the top five, what's more realistic? I would have thought we were living in some kind of twilight zone. But I would have said Burrow just based on the fact that I had seen him out there. And one of my worst predictions ever on our show, Clay, was saying that I believe Bryce Young sooner or later was going to be the starting quarterback. This was before the season, before 2020 for Alabama last year. And statistically, Mac Jones had the best season in Alabama football history. I mean, the guy completed over 77% of his passes. Just amazing. I don't know how that's going to translate to the NFL, but I am blown away. You know, if you would have told me a year ago before ever seeing Mac Jones outside of starting four games that he was going to be the number three overall pick, I wouldn't have believed it.
So if he does go number three overall, for a long time, you remember this, in college football, there was a lot of talk about, quote, system quarterbacks, right? And who was a system quarterback and who was not. You've got right now at Ohio State, Dwayne Haskins gone in less than 2 years. You have got Justin Fields potentially coming back. You now have also a larger situation here with Tua, uncertainty, I would say, about how he's going to do, and also with Mac Jones. Is it possible that the way that this thing shakes out could be a referendum to a certain extent on the systems of Steve Sarkisian at Alabama and of Jason Day at Ohio State? Because if you go two straight first-round picks and they don't necessarily pan out, that becomes considered to be a little bit of a trend.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that at all. And Mac Jones, you know, to me, more of the prototypical quarterback. Justin Fields reminds you a little bit of Dwayne Haskins. Now, I don't think Dwayne Haskins ever had that game that Fields had against Clemson. You know, where he not only looks so good, I mean, obviously Fields is an athletic guy, but also his ability just to go vertical. I don't think we really ever saw that, at least on that stage, from Dwayne Haskins. But I think if Fields doesn't pan out, I think people will – I don't think it'll be to the degree of, you know, what we saw with Mike Leach quarterbacks, although Gardner Minshew had, you know, at least a cup of coffee in the NFL. But yeah. I think, you know, there could be that possibility that people start to say that about Ryan Day.
All right, so if we know, I'm going to put you on the spot here because I'm curious what you would do. Let's presume that number one overall is, like, let me take a step back. I asked this of Jeff Schwartz, I think yesterday on the program. I said, if you had to tell me the one guy that you feel like is the most dead ringer, not going to fail coming into the NFL this year in the draft, is there a guy to you that is a can't miss prospect?
Yes, yes. And I think it's right now with the Atlanta Falcons talking about dealing number four. I stand that. I roll the dice at 36-year-old Matt Ryan, and I take Kyle Pitts. I really believe.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, Travis Kelce, the difference maker he is for Kansas City, and look, Pat Mahomes is you know, otherworldly. But George Kittle, when he was healthy, I mean, he was that weapon that propelled, you know, San Francisco, you know, obviously a great run game 2 years ago and a really good defense. But the difference was Kittle on that offense. And I think when you get a guy like Pitts, I saw him, it was, look, an abbreviated sample size. But once he got a really good quarterback and a really good system with Dan Mullen, Kyle Pitts is just a guy that you don't have an answer for. And now you saw what he did at his pro day. I mean, not that the measurables are the most important thing, but we've seen his ability to get it done on the field. With the combination of that, I just think he's a can't miss. I really do, Clay. If he stays healthy, I mean, the guy, you know, the sky's the limit.
If you think, and I agree with you, and I know Atlanta Falcon fans listening to us right now have been long suffering, but you mentioned Matt Ryan. If you think about Matt Ryan having the ability to throw to Julio Jones, to throw to Calvin Ridley, and also to throw to Kyle Pitts, I think that solves a lot of the Falcons' issues in a hurry, especially if you presume, which I do, that Arthur Smith is going to do a good job getting them in a position to make plays like he did for Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and even Jonnu Smith, who got a big-time paycheck from the New England Patriots as a free agent in the offseason. To me, Kyle Pitts is the most can't-miss prospect in the entirety of the NFL draft. And I agree with you. To me, if I was the Falcons sitting at four, I take him. I don't worry about trading out. If somebody else loves whoever else is available from the quarterback position, if you know that a guy is going to kill it for you, I don't think you worry about trying to grab a couple of extra picks. I think you take that guy and you run with him.
Yeah, look, and you saw one of the most amazing reclamation projects we've ever seen in the history of the NFL, and that was when Ryan Tannehill left Miami and went to your Tennessee Titans.
That's right.
And, you know, Arthur Smith had a lot to do with that. And, you know, I would have felt better about Arthur Smith, what he could do with a former MVP at 36 and Matt Ryan than Tannehill ever having a chance to be in an MVP conversation, which he has been over the last couple of years at certain points in the season. So if Arthur Smith can grab a weapon like Kyle Pitts, I guarantee you Matt Ryan behind the scenes is saying that's the guy he wants, because there's some great wide receivers coming out in this draft, but as you just mentioned, the Falcons are one of those teams. They don't need one of those great wide receivers. They need a great tight end.
Yeah, and remember, the Falcons get to play in a dome where I would think Kyle Pitts' speed would be even more lethal, right? Because you don't have weather conditions. You've got the ability to get down the field already with really good wide receivers. And as you start to think about Matt Ryan at 36, that doesn't even feel that old when Tom Brady just won a Super Bowl at 43, when Drew Brees has had teams that could have won Super Bowls all the way up to 41 and 42, basically. You've got Aaron Rodgers, who just posted the best season of his career and won the MVP at 37 years old. There are a lot of guys. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger threw for a lot of yards, I think, at 38. To me, Matt Ryan, you could feel good about having two or three more good years for him in the pocket, especially if you got weapons like the Falcons do, and a new coordinator, new head coach who's going to bring in this great new offensive system.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I believe Matt Ryan's got a good 4 or 5 years left. That was what was so amazing to me about the conversation that John Snyder and Pete Carroll, you know, would even think about parting ways with a guy like Russell Wilson, who's only 33 years old. I just think it's a new world. And, you know, if you would have asked me 5 or 6, 7 years ago, I would have said, you know, quarterback money, $35, $40 million a year, these guys probably will tap out early and enjoy retirement by the time they get to be 35. But seems like they want to push it further. And look, 40 is a different age now.
Yeah. Thankfully, as you and I are both in our 40s. All right. I got a great hypothetical for you. You have been my caddy before. And by the way, I'm invited to that Regions Pro-Am again, and I'm coming back down in May. So hopefully you can caddy for me again. You can take a day off work. I'm going to take a day off work and go out for their charity Pro-Am that they do in Birmingham. And hopefully we'll have a good time. But pretend that you are my caddy and that you have seen my game. You know, I've gotten my game. What number, if we were at Augusta, and there was a camera crew following us around, you know, like they do for the Charles Barkley you know, like the high end, you know, basically it's not like we're just out there hacking it up by ourselves. Like everybody else is seeing exactly what we're doing on every shot. Every single stroke counts. At Augusta, you are advising me, you are my caddy, helping me read the putts and everything else. What number do you think the over-under should be set at for 18 holes at a traditional Masters from the tips, just like these guys are playing?
I'll go 106.5.
100, like you think I could break? Like, and what if there was real money on the line? Like, what if they were like, LT, you're setting the number, but it has to be a good number, and there's like $10 million on the line, and you and I have to figure out how to break 106.5.
Well, we're going to figure out.
Wouldn't that be pretty entertaining? Wouldn't that be great television, though? Wouldn't you be like, man, I got to watch this?
Hey, look, so when you went out there, and I think the foursome, it was an awesome foursome. It was,
yeah, it was.
Kirby Smart, right. John Bell, the lead singer for Widespread's Panic, Taylor Hicks, and you.
Yes.
And I was surprised because I played golf with you multiple times, and you've been horrible like I have a lot. So you actually played about as good as you could play a couple of years ago in that tournament. So we would have to figure out what your best club is, and we just would play non-traditional golf.
Oh, that's
yes,
a good point.
I would put money on you to go under the 106.5. I mean, basically we're getting two additional shots per hole.
Yeah, we have to average a double bogey.
Yeah, look, you probably aren't going to pull your driver out the entire day. And you know, we're just going to, you know, 6-iron, 7-iron, and get up there and, you know, 2 or 3 putt. I think you can get it done. I'd love to see it.
Wouldn't it be really fun to watch? Like, I think average golfers trying to break numbers in order to make money would be incredibly entertaining television. Now, maybe not live, because 18 holes of golf takes a long time. But if you distilled that down into like an hour-long television special, and you know, you could allow live wagering to take place, because you and I would have to shut up about what the score actually was, I would watch that, right? Like, just to see what would happen. I think that would be really fun to try sometime.
What is your number you're comfortable with right now? If you had to go out there, life or death, and you have to break a certain score at Augusta, what do you think you could do?
Oh, I think life or death, I'd want like 130. imagine how nerve-wracking it would get. That's why I think the $10 million is a good one, because, you know, the white-knuckling it of how you would try to analyze it, you know, like after 3 or 4 holes, you'd be like, man, you know, we're on a pace for, you know, either we'd be like, you know, fist-pounding, or we'd be like, man, we're in trouble. Because, you know, they had that great...
Well, I think you're okay if you stay away from water. I mean, the problem would be if you ever got behind a body of water and start dropping it into the drink.
I think
it
also...
It would almost be like 10 cups.
Yeah, that for sure. But I think also sand traps, like getting out of some of those bunkers and putting yourself in a position to be able to make a shot, you know, like to putt after that, I think would be really tough. And certainly there'd be a lot of white knuckle moments on, you know, like 16, where you're on a par 3 and there's all the water there to the left and in front of the green. And then was it 13, I guess, Dub? Was it 13 where you have to hit it over the water, where Jordan Spieth just dunked one a few years ago?
Oh.
Yeah, 12, I mean, 13, 15. Those are three of the famous water holes.
Yeah, 12, 13, 15. And 16 has it too, though, right? On the left side?
Yeah, they just don't put it on 16.
Yeah, they just don't put it in there as much. I mean, I'd put a lot of water in place. I remember once, LT, I played the Players. So probably the greatest golf achievement of my life. From the Sunday Tips location, I parred the Island Green at 17. All right, that's probably the greatest golf accomplishment of my life.
Your first swing off of 17,
yes,
you actually hit green.
I did.
That's impressive.
Now, it was not like some majestic, beautiful shot. Like, it was kind of a low, like, looping. Like, it barely got onto the green, but it got there. And so I think what would be really entertaining about that is just we had a caddy, right? A caddy follows you around when you play a course. I've only played like 5 or 6 courses in my life that are so good you actually have a caddy, right, as part of the tour. And I'm not a very good golfer, for anybody out there who wonders. I'm actually kind of a bad golfer, right? But I enjoy it. But when you're out there and the caddy like has to give you advice, I remember my buddy who I was playing with was like, hey, what do you think they say on, you know, if you're playing the Real Players Championship? And he was like, I'm going to be honest with you. He said, I've never given anybody advice from this position on the course before, ever. Like in the tee box, I yanked one so bad left, and it was like short, and, you know, like it was just a ridiculous position. And I was like, so what do you tell somebody to do here on the second shot? He was like, man, to be honest, I've never had to give anybody advice from here on their second shot in my entire career as a caddy, which,
yeah, his best,
I mean,
advice
is pretty
is give
funny.
Up golf.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't play this course
don't
again.
Ever just find a better way to spend 4 hours. LT, I know you got some fun to have down at the beach at Rosemary Beach. We appreciate you coming on with us. Enjoy the weekend, and hopefully everybody enjoys the golf as well.
Yeah, thanks, Clay. Always fun, man. I'll talk to you probably next week.
Yeah, for sure. That is Lance Taylor.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
A lot of people ready for spring to officially have sprung, and I know a lot of you spent Thursday watching. I know that our next guest did, Chantel McCabe. She has been formerly with the Golf Channel. She has a new show starting on Sirius XM on April 19th. How much fun did you have watching golf at Augusta on Thursday, Chantel?
Well, it was very appropriate that it is back in April. And I don't know if it's just seeing the azaleas and having the patrons back on the course, but there was a special kind of zing in the air. And certainly it came through the television to me on my couch. But boy, is it good to have the official kickoff to the golf season this week. And we saw some amazing golf on Thursday, that's for sure.
Do you think, did it surprise you for most people? I know Justin Rose had an incredible day, but there were very few guys who were under par. Did it surprise you how difficult the course played, really, for everybody? The guys that were expected by and large to dominate did not. There were not a lot of low scores to be had on Thursday.
Yeah, well, when you're going that low, I mean, Justin Rose is playing an entirely different golf course. And just to talk about him for a second, I mean, this guy has done nothing. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that he was not even remotely on my radar 100-1 odds to win for the week, because his best finish was in the Saudi International, which is kind of a birdie fest. So a lot of people, you know, wouldn't really take that into consideration when putting their Masters picks in place. But when it comes to the big guys like Brooks Koepka and that really frustrating knee injury, and the defending champion, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, who is my pick, I mean, this is a difficult golf course. It's supposed to play difficult. There's a reason why they tiger-proof the place, because they want people to earn their keeps. Firm and fast, I mean, Fred Couples was out there this week and said he has never seen the golf course, which is cliche to say, oh, I've never seen it in this great of shape. But for him to admit that a lot of these guys who saw it for the first time back in the fall, guys like Colin Morikawa, who played at Augusta National for the very first time in the fall, are getting a rude awakening in this opening round in April, because it plays completely different, and that firm and fast has a set of teeth to it. So, you know, when minus 20 was the winning score in the fall, those are not the conditions that you could ever expect. I mean, you think back to former rounds and the winning score on Sunday. So Jordan Spieth in 2015, when he was, I mean, you could not beat him. Even if you were Tiger Woods, he was minus 18 on the week. So we knew that nobody was going to sniff that minus 20 again, which is why it is a record at the Masters. So to see the scores we saw today, it's honestly a welcome change, I think.
So as we get ready for Friday and then moving into Saturday and Sunday, Justin Rose is going to be sleeping on that lead. And he's got a pretty substantial lead, right, coming into Friday. Would you think that he has what it takes? I mean, a lot of it is analyzing his overall health, right? Because he's had such issues. He played so phenomenally well. Can you anticipate him, just based on his health-related conditions, being able to hold on to a lead like this as we move into the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, he is a major champion himself, so it's a little bit easier. I mean, getting your first green jacket is no walk in the park, but when you have control of those feelings, when you're older, when you've seen the course, when you know the misses, especially at a course like Augusta National, I mean, even if the green is 2,000 square feet, when it comes to the weekend, you're going to have to be so precise to hit a perfect approach to within 5 feet of where you're aimed. So it really comes down to the precision and proximity with a lot of these guys. And that's something we, quite frankly, have not seen at all from Justin Rose recently. A lot of people will go back to the club change he made going to Houma, and that was a serious frustration for his career. And he ended up admitting it. I mean, you don't want to upset sponsors, but getting over the hurdle of new equipment is not something to take lightly. But, you know, switching up the caddy, switching up and finally getting comfortable with your equipment and your team, that takes time. And so first of all, if you look at in past years, the guy who leads by a large margin, usually come the weekend, you see a lot of changes on the leaderboard. But I'm not going to count out Justin Rose. I'm not going to necessarily say he's going to take this thing all the way. But iron play is really what it comes down to. And a lot of guys like Will Zalatoris, who had a great opening. I mean, this guy, he's young as hell, and it's his third ever start in a major. A lot of people had Will Zalatoris, who's playing in his first Masters, to win the whole thing. So I'd keep an eye on him as well. But yeah, just over, I mean, the back spasms, you mentioned the injuries. In fact, the last time we saw him play was when he WD'd on Saturday and left Jordan Spieth out to dry playing at Arnold Palmer Invitational. And Justin Rose had those back spasms. And let's face it, when you get older, when you're tinkering with things, the injuries come a lot easier. So hopefully he stays healthy. So at least he puts on a good show this week.
Justin Rose, by the way, finished second in 2017 at the Masters, tied for second in 2015. He's also got a top 10 in 2012 and has been close, a top 10 in 2016 as well. So he's played this course well before. He knows it, and certainly he had the best day of anybody on the opening Thursday of the tournament. When you look, Chantel... when you look at all the drama that was surrounding the state of Georgia and everything else, do you think there will be any drama unrelated to golf on Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Or do you think now that people have teed off that it's all about the sport itself and all of the boycott talk, and all, which was maybe the most ridiculous and absurd argument for a boycott in the world of sports of all time, because you either play at Augusta or you can't. It's like saying, hey, the University of Georgia has to move, right? Like it's almost impossible. Do you think that story is gone now that they've actually teed off as we head into the weekend?
Well, I should have known, having a conversation with you, that this absolutely would come up and you'd put me on the spot. And I guess I asked for it because I have needled some of your followers who've commented on you posting about this story with OutKick, and the people who have had, quite frankly, ridiculous commentary related to canceling or changing the location of the Masters. And when it comes to the name, a lot of people think Masters Tournament comes from Days of Slaves, and that's quite frankly, I mean, of course you could put two and two together or draw a line from A to B if you try, but there are other sports that I don't think are quite as white, so to speak, that are also labeled the Masters because the connotation is it is the Masters, the greatest people who ever played that particular sport, like bowling. Did you know there's a bowling Masters?
I did. That's funny. And also, the master's degree is, I mean, it basically means that you have achieved a high level of acumen in a particular discipline, right?
Correct.
The entire purpose, you get a master's of business, you can get a master's of any number of different aspects. So that is this ridiculous argument. The funnier one to me than even the name, because I think most people just kind of throw up their hands at the name. The funnier one to me is, I think that some of these people don't know sports very well because, Chantel, they
exactly.
were like, oh, you should just move the Masters. As if it's like, you know, the U.S. Open or the PGA or the Open overseas in England. Like, you can't just change that. The whole purpose of the Masters is you play the same course every year, I think going all the way back to 1934 or whatever the heck it is, like you can't
yep.
relocate the Masters. That's why the analogy I was making too is like, it's like saying, hey, the University of Georgia shouldn't be in Georgia anymore. All right, well, what are you going to do? Like the physical university is there. You can't relocate it. You can't put it anywhere else.
Yes, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that. I think, and I'll give people credit because if you're just reading the headlines, reading the stories, and not grabbing the context, which, let's face it, there are very few places in media that are going to give you the appropriate context with the
yeah.
headline, and then fewer people who are actually going to, in fact, take the effort and time to read through and educate themselves before they throw out an opinion on Twitter. So I get it. If you are not familiar with the golf space, which is a very niche sport, then you would have no idea that, okay, this isn't just like, oh, we move the Super Bowl around every year, so why can't we do that for the Masters?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's not how it works. So your analogy of picking up a state university and just deciding you're going to put it in another state and call it the same thing is dead on. And I think that's the context that lacks and people throw out that opinion. So anyway, circling back to your initial question, do I think that now we're started this up, people are going to get over it? Absolutely, because we know how the news cycle works. And of course, there'll be a few people who will die on this hill and some of the regular people on Twitter who will just beat this horse dead, which I guess I probably can't say that either. But you get my point that we're kind of past that now. There was a beautiful ceremonial tee shot moment, and I think a lot of people, for the most part, want to see good golf. And this thing's going, and it's not turning around. And, of course, we both know that people pick and choose what they want to get upset about. I mean, it is amazing to me that, for example, you can have so many animal lovers, but we still have animal racing sports in the world. But yet people want to get caught up on where the Masters takes place. So that's my two cents.
All right. Couple of different things that happened during the course. Thank you for that. I put you on the, I gave you a big microphone there. Thursday. All right. We know that Rory dunked one of his shots recently in the swimming pool, right? It got a little bit of attention. Somebody's yard, where he dropped it in. Then he hits his dad on the course too, which I don't know what the odds are. I mean, his dad was probably 150 yards away and gets hit by his son's iron shot. But it was kind of emblematic of Rory seeming to lose his way in a huge way. Can he get it back, or what's going on with him, and how much of it is mental as opposed to physical?
It's 100% mental at this point, and Clay, I'm worried about him. Not like, oh my gosh, is he ever going to get back? But it's like, how hard must it be as an athlete to try to be putting the pieces back together on public display when it's like going that sideways? I mean, it's like trying to completely do a makeover, and I mean, you're at the mercy of the embarrassment of all of the stumbles along the way. So I hate it for him, and he is the darling, and he is a leader in the space. I thought, actually, you know, doubling back to your question about the situation surrounding Georgia voting, he answered the question eloquently without actually kind of giving an answer, because he doesn't want to put himself in a compromising position. So he's really become like a leader within the PGA Tour, and I respect that. And so it's got to be even more difficult when a lot of people turn to you for different things, when you are the spokesperson, so to speak, and you're battling a really bad swing situation. So yeah, you look at his scores from Thursday and you just go, wow. I mean, there was a lot of bad swings. I think at Amen Corner, I had it locked on the Amen Corner channel, and his visible frustration, which was interesting because he showed a lot of that exterior frustration at API, and he actually didn't really have a bad finish. I'm talking about Arnold Palmer Invitational. And so it's funny how down he gets on himself, but it's kind of like relatable too for some of us, because we've all been on – I've seen you on the golf course and had a couple of miss hits. So it's
– Every one of my shots is a miss hit.
I was being generous there.
Yeah, very generous.
Seen you in Mexico, and I couldn't quite hit the green, but it's all good. But yeah, I actually think for some players, it can get so frustrating, but the way that he handles himself overall, like, you see the frustration, but it doesn't get so far away from him that it overtakes things. But he's working with that new swing coach, Pete Cowan, who has been a game changer for several players, including Danny Willett and most recently Brooks Koepka. And Pete Cowan apparently is a magic maker, and he's a really interesting guy. A lot of people know, like, Butch Harmon, Chris Cuomo, but I'm telling you, Pete Cowan is like an amazing person for some of the top players in the world, and is somehow sneaky under the radar. So I think this is a big project ahead of him for Pete, but I have faith in the process there. And some guy, I mean, Jordan Spieth, for example, who finally got a win and broke through again last week at the Valero Texas Open. There were times, like, in Spieth's career in the last couple years, I was like, all right, this is going to be like a one-year overhaul. But I don't think we're quite at that level of sound the alarm when it comes to Rory, if that gives you any perspective.
Yeah, no, that's good. In terms of Rory, Spieth, you were just mentioning, finally wins a tournament last weekend at the Valero for the first time in 4 years. Came out and had a so-so opening round, I think it's fair to say, relative to expectations. What do you think is reasonable to expect of Jordan Spieth going forward now that we're into the majors? We'll see whether or not he can make a run at Augusta, but do you think he's back to, should be considered at the top of every major leaderboard, a major contender going forward?
Yeah, a lot of people were trying to ride him into the sunset after last week's win. And don't get me wrong, I mean, a win is not debatable. Like, you got the job done. You finally shook the demons, which he was not shy with talking about. But no, we are not at the place of 2015 where you were never going to lose if you bet on Jordan Spieth and, of course, the number one player in the world. I think that although that was an encouraging sign, he's not playing lights out. He doesn't have that killer instinct, and you can tell, I kid you not, you can tell with his walk. You can tell with his swag when it comes to how comfortable and confident he is. He wears his heart on his sleeves, and I think maybe we can start getting there if there's an encouraging sign this week, since this is kind of his paradise. It really sets up well for him, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yes, he won last week. Everyone calm down. I know 2015 was wonderful, but it's 2021 is not 2015.
We're talking to Chantel McCabe. All right, a couple of other things that I loved about the opening round. I like some of the awkward shots. Have you ever seen an eagle putt that ended up in the water? Did you see the video of Dub? You can tell me. You might have seen it, Chantel. I don't know. I tweeted it out. But who was the guy, Dub, who put it in, the eagle putt? Oh, you didn't see this.
No, okay. I'm going to look this up right now.
Yeah, I tweeted it. I'm going to pull it up.
It was on 15.
Okay.
It was on 15.
And there was a handful of guys chipped it into the water. This guy putted it into the water. I'm trying to figure out who it was as well.
Bernd Weisberger.
Oh, Bernd Weisberger.
Bernd Weisberger. He had an eagle putt on 15, and he put it in the water. So his next shot.
I'm looking at this now.
I've never even seen that before. His next shot was a par putt from the exact same spot. Do you have to fire your caddy on the spot just to make a point? That is one of the most, I always think that letting regular people putt, the fact that you're basically putting on a sheet of glass or a sheet of ice, you don't really recognize that when you're watching it on television. But to have a professional golfer go from eagle putt to putting it in the water and then you're attempting a par putt from the exact same location, I've never seen that before. That's something that I wouldn't be attempting an eagle putt. I can certainly imagine attempting a birdie putt occasionally and putting it in the water. But an eagle putt that ends up a par putt is pretty unbelievable on the scorecard.
Yeah, remember I said earlier about how important it is to land within 5 feet of exactly where you want to on the greens? Well, that's why, because there are some places on the golf course that are just impossible. Some places on the green that will happen to everyone, no matter what your name is, what number your rank is in the world. And that is a perfect example of that putt right there. I'm watching it on repeat, and it doesn't – oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That sucks, man. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it makes you appreciate when you can play well. But, I mean, I'm telling you, Augusta National, there is a reason why it is played in April, and the best man does win in the field.
We're talking to Chantel McCabe from formerly from the Golf Channel. She's got her own show starting on Sirius XM on April the 19th. All right, so Bryson DeChambeau, do you think that he is well-liked in any way on the tour? I love that he's trying to be kind of like a mad scientist and find a way to kind of change the way the game is played, but it didn't work for him in November. He came in as a favorite in one of the favorites, and it did not work for him again. What's your take on him and so far his antics that have not really produced much results at Augusta?
Oh, antics. Interesting word. You are revealing yourself with that.
I love anybody who is gives us good topic. Like yesterday, Dub and I were talking about his crazy – did you see the video that went viral of him just absolutely hammering his driver as fast as he could while Vijay Singh kind of stood with a perplexed look on his face? I am pro antics, right? Like, I like anybody who does something a little bit different that provokes a reaction one way or the other. Because frankly, there isn't really anybody on the tour that is that polarizing in any way, form, or fashion. But so far, DeChambeau has gotten a lot of attention for his mad scientist plans, and they haven't really panned out any way like I think he would have anticipated.
Well, hang on a second. He is a major champion winner. So
yes,
at some point, the antics actually do add up, and they did pay off, which I think is a hell of a feat considering all of the ways that the USGA had to quite literally work with Bryson because they were trying to curb or manage all of his crazy ideas, like when he was pulling out the compass a few years ago and putting the
which I love
floating
at I
the
love
water. No, I just hey, nobody else is doing it, so it's people are like, oh, that's cheating. How is it cheating? I mean, everyone else had the opportunity to do that too, and they chose not to. So Actually, I got the chance to talk to him after his first ever win, John Deere Classic. And it's so interesting to me that at the time, the golf world was like, who is this guy? Like, oh, he's like trying to ruin the game. And now all the golf nerds have been like, whoa, look what he's doing. He's overpowering the course. It's the next Tiger. They're going to have to Bryson through. So it's so interesting to me how the golf hardos completely have turned their tune when it comes to Bryson. And I think that's actually said something. It's obviously a compliment to him, but I thought that, okay, it's probably us writers and media people who, to your point, love having something to talk about, because let's face it, unlike basketball, football, other sports where there's trash talk, there's, you know, interesting and compelling things that could keep us talking about the sport for hours. In golf, I mean, no offense, we're a little bit dry over here. And so Bryson definitely spices things up. But I've got to give him a ton of credit, because I kid you not, like, players go out of their way to compliment him and to watch him. Like, DJ, like, he doesn't necessarily want to be doing that, but he's like, first of all, how did this guy even get this idea? Second of all, he's crazy enough to do it and try it in tournaments and sacrifice the possibility of not playing his best in order to see what works and what doesn't. But they respect him, too. Like, Kevin Na picks his brain to say, hey, like, you know, what things are within reason that I can try here that might actually help my game? So it's really fascinating to me when players respect it and they don't think it's buffoonery, and they're interested in learning about the process and how he thinks about things, because it's obviously unconventional, but it's always interested me that people want to learn from him, not just watch him, but like actually get involved a little bit in the process. And by the way, bless Tim Tucker's heart, his caddy, because this guy's been on his bag since, I mean, forever. And he has to say, okay, yeah, all right, let's do this. And I doubt he has many veto cards, because Bryson kind of runs the show. But Tim, hey, he's along for the ride, and he's got to take a lot of the crap that comes with it.
Chantel McCabe, I appreciate you. Enjoy all of the Masters, and we'll talk to you again maybe after this thing is complete, coming back next week.
That's right. We'll end on that note. Good to talk to you, and go Justin Thomas, my pick. We'll see you guys on Sunday.
Excellent. Good stuff. That is Chantel McCabe.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hope all of you are ready for a great weekend. The Masters Friday edition back underway. Obviously, Justin Rose, dominant performance on Thursday. Can he maintain that position? That will be the number one story throughout the day on Friday. Looking at the odds as things move forward. Do people believe in Justin Rose or not? Justin Rose around a 4-1 number on winning the Masters. So still a lot of uncertainty about his odds to be able to pull that off. So we will see exactly how that goes. Jordan Spieth put a little bit of mojo together down the stretch. Hideki Matsuyama, John Rahm, Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, Webb Simpson, Dustin Johnson, and Brian Harman are around the top 8 or 9 golfers right now as we get ready for Friday to see what will look like going into the weekend. Speaking of going into the weekend, Danny G has been quarantining all week after he went last weekend to go watch the Dodgers play on the road against the Colorado Rockies. And we have been testing to see whether or not he's actually awake during the show or not. And I believe we have him on the line right now, early in the morning out in California. Danny G, are you up? Are you with us?
You know that I'm wide awake. And even if I wasn't still doing all of the digital work behind the scenes, you know how this goes. You cannot sleep in because your clock is set to waking up so early doing morning radio.
It is funny on Saturday and Sunday, like you're like, I don't remember the last, it's a good point. Like, I don't remember the last time I slept past even, it's not like it's super late, but like 7:30. I mean, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, on Saturday or Sunday, like I'm going to sleep in forever. And then 7:30 is not like super late or super early, I don't think, for most people. But I can't sleep past that anyway, because it doesn't really matter what I go to sleep now. That's about the time that I just wake up. So yes, when you've been doing morning radio, what is this? We're almost into year 6 now, I think, of the show, if I'm not mistaken. I think we are in year 6, whatever the heck it is. So we've been doing this for a while. All right. So we haven't done this for some time now. I appreciate all of you who subscribe to the podcast, millions of you downloading it, downloading podcast every single month now. And what I would appreciate is if you'll take the time to go give us a 5-star review. You can also just go give us 5 stars. But the 5-star review, if you can be funny, if you can be smart, if you can be witty, then Danny G reads all of these reviews, and he will give you the honor of having your review read. So, first of all, we haven't done this in a long time. I've been forgetting to do it. What are the responses looking like of late? I don't really look at any of these. Do we have, in fact, I'm pulling it up right now. How many reviews do we actually have now? I mean, I know, I assume there's an absolute ton. I just accidentally hit the podcast there. Let me see if I can stop it. I assume there are a ton of these reviews up now because we've been asking people to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the total is, but I have literally read every single one, and there are hundreds.
Okay.
And hundreds.
Yeah, 3,400. So 3,400 of you have given us a rating so far. So if you're out there listening right now, I would appreciate you going and giving us more ratings. You can find out, search out my name, Outkick. You can search out, you can search out the name of the show, Outkick, or my name, Clay Travis. All right, what is the latest that is out there, Danny G?
Yeah, so we're going to reward the podcast listeners right now with the best 5-star reviews with the exclusive Outkick 5-star t-shirt. But you know,
this is the only way you can get the Outkick 5-star t-shirt is by giving a 5-star review.
Yeah, these are very exclusive, okay? This is the best Outkick t-shirt you can get. I like to start with a 1-star review, though, just so that your head doesn't get even bigger than it already is. This is from CIAB, that's his iTunes handle, and his title, Clay is a Brick. His review,
yes.
Clay is a Brick.
That's it?
That's it, and I guess that's like thick as a brick. He must be talking about your head.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, my haters, like as I continue to rise in influence, prominence, stellar success, they become more desperate, I think. They're floundering now. Like, it's harder and harder to find them, and they're becoming less and less witty. So, good job. Good job out there, haters.
Yeah, and I've seen you play sports before. That'd be a better description of your basketball game right there. Clay is a Brick. All right, let's go to the first t-shirt winner here from ECU Joe. His title for his 5-star review, John McClain the GOAT.
John McClain is great.
Yeah, he said he listened to the last interview that you had with John McClain, and he wants to drive to Texas and eat barbecue with him. And
oh, that's
watch
a great
Western
idea.
Movies.
Yeah.
He says that John McClain is the GOAT. What a thoughtful and interesting guy. Keep up the good work. I like when you have him on the program.
John is a fantastic guy, and we need to get him on next week. I reached out to him to see if he could come on this morning, but he was too busy running around doing a lot of things. But Baylor, he's a huge Baylor fan. He went to Baylor, I believe, undergrad. He's in their Hall of Fame, Athletics Hall of Fame. They inducted him. Been covering the NFL for 45 years. Obviously, this Deshaun Watson story has thrown everything in a loop. Let's be honest, like you don't anticipate if you are covering the NFL that suddenly the star player on your team is going to end up in a multi-month legal entanglement. And so that has been a battle the likes of which very few writers in the history of NFL teams have had to cover to such an extent. And I feel like it's just getting started, the mess that is Deshaun Watson. So I agree. John McClain is fantastic.
Big Blue Bobby C. And his review is titled, I'm with Outkick. He says, what a breath of fresh air it is to listen to Fox Sports Radio's Outkick the Coverage in Florida, especially after being subjected to the nonsensical twist applied to sports reporting up north by ESPN Radio. Clay Travis has a clear and simple way of not only delivering sports news, but he sets a logical, fact-based editorial on the real relationship between sports and the rest of our social issues. From a New Yorker who had enough of the false application of the so-called politically correct approach to everything, I am now a devoted listener to Outkick. Thanks, Bobby C., the Big Blue Giants fan.
appreciate that from Bobby C. A lot of people have found us all over the place, but I think in particular people who've been driven insane in some ways by the way that other sports media covers this story on a day-to-day basis, the story of sports in a larger context. There are a lot of people who feel like they aren't being spoken for, and I know this show speaks for a lot of those people, so that certainly is something that I'm proud of.
All right, and the next five-star winner, Chris A., his title, Eddie's 6 Minutes. In honor of the 6 minutes that Eddie saves by bailing on the show early, I'll make this brief.
Yes.
I've been listening to the show all the way back to Opaque Gate.
Yes.
And I don't miss a single episode. I got my wife to listen and she's also hooked. Clay and the crew are always honest and straightforward where others have agendas. This is so refreshing. Come for the sports and stay for the entertainment of Animal Thunderdome, technology failing rants, Danny's Tinderonis, and of course Petros. Chris in Nashville, he says, sorry, Clay, we infiltrated your state from Chicago.
I got to tell you this, and I'm probably jinxing it in many ways. Dub, when's the last time that our technology failed?
Man, you are going to jinx this so hard.
I mean, but our phones, like we haven't had, I totally jinxed it, but we had like 3 years where the phones would never work to the point where my biggest fear when we were interviewing President Trump was that somehow the phones wouldn't work. It wasn't about interviewing the president. It was like, oh my God, what if he calls us and we just drop him and it's the president? It's not like we can just call the White House back. So that was my biggest fear about having the president on, was that somehow our technology would fail. But it's been like a year, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've been on a real hot streak with the phones, and you're absolutely right. They have been as reliable as they've ever been recently, but now that you bring it up, I'm sure we're going to have some technical difficulties here in the coming weeks and months ahead.
I don't think there's any doubt. All right, Danny G, what else you got?
All right, let's go to the next. Yeah, and what says is that the...
Hold on a sec. Is this real life? Did Danny G's own phone stop working here as soon as I said, now this is your cell phone, not the actual cell phones associated with, not the phones associated with the show, but immediately, literally right after I say, I feel like in some way, Dub, there's somebody out there like in the NSA who listens and just screws with us.
That may have just been Danny G screwing with us, I think.
Is that intentional?
Right. You might be right. All right, this one is from MJ, the best in sports. I've been listening to Clay for over 6 years now. He single-handedly took down MSESPN morning radio ratings and their woke virtue signaling. Authenticity and consistent standards matter. Although China and the NBA may not like my five-star review, I won't just shut up and listen. I'm more than a listener. I also type reviews. I hope to get credit from Danny for being brave and sending Clay a compliment. D-Bat.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's good stuff.
There you go. Those are our winners for this week. Now, if you heard your review being read, go ahead and hit me up on Twitter, at Danny G Radio. And if for some reason you don't have a Twitter, you can always go to DannyGRadio.com and message me there on the site.
All right. You have your own website. I didn't even know that.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at FoxSportsRadio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.